guest this hour says President Trump has already made America great again, but maybe not in the way he intended. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Our guest says that through his words and actions, President Trump has breathed new life into the First Amendment. More people are getting politically active. More people are following the news, subscribing to newspapers. Are you among them? And do you think this is a good thing? What are you doing? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Alicia Shepherd. She is a media writer, journalist, and former ombudsman for National Public Radio, or NPR. Her piece, Trump Has Already Made America Great Again, ran last week in USA Today. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. So, well, as I just mentioned, you wrote that President Trump has breathed new life into the freedoms of the First Amendment, which is how you say he's made America great again. Expand on that. What do you mean by that?
Well, I was just struck as a media writer by how re-energized the news business is. If you think about 5 years ago, newspapers have been dying off. All the news has been doom and gloom about what's happening with newspapers, TV, internet sites. I mean, the money's not being there, being spent. Subscriptions are down. And I realized that after Donald Trump was elected, that you started to see a real uptick in subscriptions, particularly to major newspapers like the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and then even nonprofit news sites like ProPublica that are small organizations that are dependent much more on donor donations are also doing really well. And then, when you add to it that the number of women who have decided that they want to run for office, and there's a lot of groups around the country that really focus on helping women become prepared to run for office. And in particular, one Emily's List said that, after that article appeared, they said that they've seen almost 10,000 women since Election Day come to them to look on how to run for office. So those three things together, the increase in the new subscriptions, more women getting involved in running for office, and the civic engagement just made me think, wow, this isn't... things are good. This is exactly how it should be in this country.
Well, and expand upon that. Why is this such a good thing that more of us are subscribing to newspapers and maybe getting politically involved, more politically involved than we used to be?
Well, if we just talk about women, the number of women in the Senate, there's only 20 senators out of 100. In the House, I don't have the number right off the top of my head, but it's, there are 435 members of the House, and it certainly isn't 50-50 by a long stretch. So just at a national level, women are 50% of the population, and we need to have our voices represented. And for my lifetime, it seems like, we've been dominated by white males. And so I'm happy to see a lot more women involved. And, of course, if we're going to participate in a democratic country, we need to be educated. We need to have facts. We need to have good information. And to have the news business re-energized and doing good investigative reporting and, getting out there and getting a lot of news that things that people don't know about. I mean, that really is, isn't it, Joy? The definition of news is what you don't know about. And, we all are busy in our lives, and so we really are dependent on a strong news media.
Yeah, but President Trump has been such a fierce critic of the news media, calling reporters horrible and dishonest people, labeling CNN and other outlets fake news. I mean, how has and how has the media responded to this?
Well, the fact that the President of the United States and his spokespeople constantly demonize the press is definitely not a good thing. And you know, one of the things that Donald Trump is very good at is to do say things like any information or news stories that he disagrees with, instead of countering with information that might give you another perspective, he dismisses it. He says it's fake news, that the news media is irresponsible, they're failing. And so when he does that, what happens is that it creates confusion and what is the truth. And so, you know, I could do a whole nother article on, you know, that particular topic. And in fact, I'm working right now on a report for PEN America about the negative impact of so-called fake news. And I say that because it's really more disinformation, because news by definition isn't fake. And so that's such a overused term right now, and it's come to mean many things to different people. But you know, it is that the whole idea of creating a world, a media ecosystem where people are just not sure what to believe is very troubling.
Yeah. Why would a political leader want to do that? Want to try to discredit the major news media?
Well, I mean, there's nothing new about this. And, you know, I wrote a book about Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, the two reporters at the Washington Post who helped to shine a spotlight on what Richard Nixon did during Watergate. And at that time, President Nixon was equally critical of the media. And you know, I didn't call them the enemy of the people, but he might have. And if you remember, Vice President Spiro Agnew at the time called them nattering nabobs of negativism. That's how he referred to the media. So, you know, a president will do this, and all presidents are critical of the media. They don't like to be criticized. They believe that what they're doing is the right thing. It seems to me that rather than accepting that we live in a world, in a society in America where we have a First Amendment and we have, you know, the right to have a free press and free expression, and that it should be a healthy back and forth between the media and the president and the citizens, Donald Trump doesn't seem to like that. To me, it seems like a manipulative technique, and I don't say that as a negative. I think it has a negative impact, but it's how he chooses to govern.
President Trump did tweet something about you know, the failing New York Times and right. You know, ratings going down the toilet or something. And the New York Times actually responded saying, no, subscriptions are actually up. So apparently you quoted the executive editor as saying, every time he tweets, it drives subscriptions wildly.
Yes, which is not exactly what you would expect. And I mean, I think the New York Times, obviously it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest newspaper in the U.S., has really struggled financially in the last couple of years, particularly as it's moved more into a digital space. And so in many ways, Donald Trump's presidency and the election turned out to be an unintended gift to the New York Times and also to the Washington Post. And in many ways, the two papers are, I read an article last night about are quote unquote at war with one another, but in a good way. You know, there's just such the media feels so much more vibrant to me as someone who's been writing about it for 20 years, that it actually feels like an exciting time.
We have caller, so let's go to Dean in Appleton first. Hi, Dean.
Hi, good morning. I guess my consumption of the news is about the same as it's ever been. However, during the election and especially after the election, I've been doing a lot of fact-checking, a lot more fact-checking. Because there's so much more in social media and like Facebook, there's a lot of memes out there just making outrageous claims. Yeah. And I mean, you know, people can check these things out. I use a tool called Snopes, but if you see a story that has no publicly listed writers, editors, or owners, or a business address, or a phone number, chances are that is fake news, and Donald Trump should be informed exactly what fake news is. He's got a base of gullible supporters that will just believe anything that he lobs out there, and when he says, you know, calls a credible news source fake news, I mean, that's when your, you know, alerts should be going off right away.
Thank you, Dean.
Well, that's a good tip. That's a very good tip, too. I think, you know, as particularly as someone who has the long perspective that I do from the work I've done, you know, I'm 63 years old, so I remember in days when we had three networks and Walter Cronkite was the most trusted man in America, and the news organizations really led as gatekeepers of, you know, going out, getting the news, deciding what the public should get and what they should be, what was of interest, what was of necessity for them to know. And now, because of the internet, you know, which really took off in, say, 1999 with the advent of broadband and everybody began to have access, we have, you know, a cesspool of information out there. And so the caller is exactly right that it is now incumbent on us as savvy news consumers to actually investigate, to look at the about column, you know, to go onto a website, look at about, find out who they are, who funds them, to use fact-checking sites like PolitiFact or the Washington Post has a very good fact-checking organization now, and Snopes, as he mentioned. And so if you see something, you should, as a, you know, responsible consumer, check it out. And I've been doing a lot of work with the news literacy program, which goes into middle schools and high schools and tries to teach critical thinking skills. You know, we think of young kids as digital natives, but studies have shown that they can't tell the difference between an opinion column, an advertisement, or a news article. And so that's really where we need to be putting our effort.
We are talking with Alicia Shepherd. She is a media writer, journalist, former ombudsman for NPR. Her piece, Trump Has Already Made America Great Again, ran last week in USA Today, and we have posted it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And we are wondering if you agree. Do you think President Trump is making America great again in how he is inspiring so many to read up more on the news and or become politically active? Wondering if you have increased your news consumption or your political activity since the election of Donald Trump. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with our guest, Alicia Shepherd, who is a former ombudsman for NPR, media writer, journalist. Her recent piece, Trump Has Already Made America Great Again, ran last week in USA Today, and we are talking with her about how she says President Trump is making good on his promise to make America great again, but maybe not in the ways he envisioned. She says that Trump is inspiring the news media and women and the politically inactive up until now. And we're wondering if you have been inspired by the election of Donald Trump. Are you more politically involved than you were before? How so? Are you paying more attention to the news? Are you subscribing to news sources, more news sources? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Alan in Two Rivers is with us. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling, Alan. I understand that you are a young person who got involved in politics.
One of them millennials, yeah. When I was 16, I was working an eight-hour job during the summer on the computer, so 8 hours of data entry. And I had nothing to do, so I would turn on NPR and listen. But before that, I had no interest in any politics or anything. Most of what I'd attribute that to, finding that actually interesting, is probably the Trump and Sanders.
I'm sorry, Alan, the Trump and Sanders campaigns.
Right, yeah. The Sanders kind of drew me in at first. Eventually, I supported Clinton as much as you can before you can vote. But, you know, Trump made it interesting until then, and I found that a lot of the people in my schools have become interested in politics because of those two as well.
So what are you doing to be, more interested, just following the news more? Or are you actually getting involved in campaigns or what?
I would write articles for my school newspaper highlighting different topics and researching them and going on like PolitiFact, and I watch a lot of the comedy late night comedy shows. Mainly just so that, you know, it's not as kind of depressing watching the news. You know, get some laughs out of it if you're going to do it.
Are you, Alan, ever? Would you consider? We hear that millennials have absolutely no interest in running for office. Are you in that camp, or are you thinking that maybe?
I'm right now. Thinking of two diverging paths, sort of like a software engineering or politics. I would consider running.
Well, how about that, Alicia?
That is great. I mean, that's an example and of particularly young people getting much more involved, and that was the great thing about Bernie Sanders joining the Democratic campaign, was just how many young people, you know, got out there and were re-energized. And I don't want to say that this is just happening on the left, because this is happening on the right as well. I mean, obviously by the huge crowds that Donald Trump would draw at his campaign rallies and people out there working for him, that this is not something that is left or right. This is something where I think all Americans, regardless of political stripe, are much more active, and they're talking all the time about politics in a way that I can't remember in the last 10 or 20 years. I don't know about you, Joy.
No, I agree. I'm close to your age. But I'm pleased, though, that Alan is, he didn't say this, he is 17 years old.
I know, and he's calling. You know, Alan, you sound like you're really savvy, and I'm just wondering, in your high school, are they teaching any kind of news literacy, teaching you to question information and to not just accept or like or pass on information? I mean, I just think that's what we all have to do, is take a step back and look, is this article accurate before I share it, and rather than pass on something that is incorrect?
My parents my mom just went back to college, and she took a couple of political classes, and she introduced me to like NPR and a couple news sources, and then I kind of went from there. But right now I'm taking a few political classes at my college.
Great.
Thank you, Alan. Congratulations, and good luck to you. We are talking with Alicia Shepard. She is a media writer, journalist, former ombudsman for National Public Radio. Talking with her about her piece where she says President Trump has inspired a lot of us, a lot of people, to become more politically active and to be more critical news consumers. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for her, maybe your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's go to Katie in Stoughton. Hi, Katie.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Similar to your previous caller, my husband and I started listening to NPR during the election and continue to now, obviously. But my husband, being in his early 20s, actually decided that he wanted to get involved immediately after the election and ran for school board in Stoughton. And is now considering possibly, you know, other political offices in the community. But even during debates and forums, he would say it when asked why he wanted to run. He said it, he was actually just scared and wanted to get involved and not be someone who's just sitting at home hoping someone else takes care of it.
Well, what about you, Katie?
So I am not quite as aggressive as him right now, but I am really proud that he wanted to take that step right away.
Yeah, I mean, it is great, but we do see we really need to have more young women who get interested in running for office. And I realize we're not all cut out to be that way, but you know, my hope that your generation will take the call and see, there's a group called Running Start, and they've seen, and that's to help women get in office, and they've seen an uptick in young women becoming interested in their program, and they are a bipartisan group. But the other thing is, you don't have to run for office to get involved. There's lots of things that you can do at your local level with, you know, volunteer organizations, school PTAs. So I think the call really is for all of us to not think, as you just said, that someone else will do it, but that we need to step up and do it.
Yeah. I'm wondering, Alicia, this Women's March on Washington on the day after Inauguration Day was huge. And then there was another protest or rally on when was it? That was the International Day of Women.
International Women's Day.
Yeah.
And even, you know, there was a Right to Life rally in Washington, D.C., I think the week after the Women's March, that also got bigger numbers than they usually do.
Yeah, so again, yeah, they're then, both sides of political issues there.
Right.
But do you see this? Some said that the International Women's Day rallies were, you know, not as well attended as the March on Washington. Do you think in any way this is petering out, as they say, or is it still sustaining?
I'm not, honestly, that directly involved with any of these groups, but there is always that fear that, you know, initially everyone was energized and the people who felt that, you know, the popular vote had not been heard, that Donald Trump won by the electoral vote but not the popular vote. And so I think that spurred a lot of people to come out the day after the inauguration for the Women's March. And so the question is, where are we going to be as a country a year from now? Are people going to just sort of have their say and then go back to their caves, or are they going to stay involved? And it's not just marches, clearly. I mean, marches are good visuals, but it's really how active people are at the local levels and in their own communities. Mm-hmm. That's harder to measure, but I'm hoping that that won't peter out. And I do think that these women's organizations like Emily's List and Running Start, who are seeing a lot more women interested, would be the one way of measuring how committed people really are.
Let's go to Josh in Madison. Hi, Josh.
Hi. I love the show and really enjoy it. I listen to it every morning.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I agree that people are getting involved, but I fear that they're getting involved maybe on sensational issues, and we're not really paying attention to, I guess, the more what I consider damaging facts. And I mean, the fact that we have a president who's basically saying the news is fake, and it kind of puts a person in perspective of they don't know what to believe or not. I mean, I think I could tell pretty easily. But, you know, there's things like where they're right now, there's a bill being considered that would allow employers to genetically test you. And I mean, that could affect things of like your insurance and how they offer it and if you can get a job. And there's just like things like that I don't really hear too much about.
Oh, I get it. So some really important issues are maybe just glossed over, Alicia, and or not even discussed. And everybody is focused on the shiny object that just occurred.
So, Josh, the issue that you're talking about, is that at the state level or at the national level?
I believe it's the national level. But there are things at the state level, like here in Wisconsin. Walker recently, I think the Republicans passed a bill that barred people from suing companies for, like, lead exposure. And right now there's a lead crisis there's high levels of lead found in Milwaukee. So, you know, what are those people about to do? There's also a bill that the Republicans are considering that would eliminate class action lawsuits.
Yeah, and before we go into too many details of too many other bills, which are important, Josh, and we will do more on those another time, but Josh's overall point, Alicia, that we're not paying attention to the really important things, maybe because at the state and national level, there are sensational things that are brought up, and we're talking about fake news and or tax return leaks and or something else that maybe is not as important.
Well, he's actually brought up a lot of good issues. I mean, one that, you know, calling something fake news distracts from the real issue that the news media brought up, and two, that there's still very much a pack journalism mentality, and that news media often tend to go after the shiny object because maybe it's easy to cover, or also because it will bring in readers and viewers, and those are still very necessary. Advertising still plays a role in how news organizations are funded. And the other thing that he makes me think of is that, you know, where the news media is vibrant, but not, I'm not sure there's as much of a resurgence, is, you know, at the state and local level. I mean, I think in some places, a local newspaper will cover issues well, but, you know, that may be true in Madison or in Milwaukee, but I don't know if it's true in the smaller areas, the small towns and cities in Wisconsin. And so so for example, like the state legislatures, you know, there's been a lot of research to show that the news media really does not do a very good job of covering state legislatures, mm-hmm. which is why I asked him, is that issue at the state level? So he makes a very valid point, and I think that is definitely of concern, because you want to operate in sunlight, and, you know, if the news media is there, then they're going to know what's going on in reporting. And so State House reporters the numbers have definitely declined in the last.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to toot WPR's horn a little bit. We expanded our state capital reporting core this year, too. And we do get into a lot of the smaller towns and rural areas all over the state of Wisconsin. So,
yeah, which is great, which is why we need the public radio system. And to think that Donald Trump may be trying to eviscerate that is very disconcerting.
Yeah, that's something that we'll follow up on again, and in just the near future, because I think he's going to release his budget this week.
Thursday, they were talking about, and you know, both of us know that we've been around and seen that public radio is often threatened, but there's always been a strong bipartisan group in Congress that supports public media, TV, and radio. But I'd say this threat seems a lot more powerful because you have a Republican House, Senate, and in the White House. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't going to bring this up, but we do have a comment on Facebook where someone says, this is just, you know, liberal talk, what you wrote, and another reason to defund public broadcasting. What, when you hear that NPR or public broadcasting, WPR, should be defunded because some believe it has a liberal slant, what do you tell people?
Well, I actually think two things. I think that that bias is in the eyes of the beholder, that there's something called confirmation bias. And it means that if I hear something that I don't agree with, that then I determine that that news outlet is biased. And so I think that that exists a lot. I think that, you know, having spent 4 years at National Public Radio and spent a lot of time visiting the stations, I think that they really do try to make an effort to cover things, not just both sides, but I would say all sides. But I will say that if you do, we talk a lot about the need for diversity in the newsroom. So diversity in terms of gender, in terms of age, in terms of military background, political stripe, and ethnicity. We tend to always think of diversity in newsrooms as ethnicity, but it really is much more. And the fact of the matter is, I don't think that you find a lot of Republican or right leaning journalists in many newsrooms. And so what that means is that good? No. But what it does mean is that news organizations really need to work hard to counter their own biases. And so just based on the fact that the news organizations tend, the people who work in them have their own political beliefs, obviously we all do, but they really need to really work hard to make sure that you are, A, as a journalist, aware of your bias, and then, B, work against it.
Our guest is Alicia Shepherd, media writer, journalist, former ombudsman for National Public Radio. We are talking with her about a recent piece she wrote that appeared in USA Today. It was headlined, "Trump Already Has Made America Great Again." But as you get into it, she's saying in unintended ways that through his actions and through his words, President Trump has inspired the politically inactive to become politically active, has inspired people to become more critical news consumers, to also be to subscribe to more newspapers. And we're wondering what you think, what questions you have. Are you more politically active? Are you more of a news consumer? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Curtin Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Curtin Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Curtin. Wondering if you have become more politically interested and engaged since President Donald Trump came to office or rose to power. Does President Trump have you thinking about running for office or getting politically involved? Are you doing more news consumption and fact-checking the news more? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Before we go back to the phones, Alicia, I wanted to ask you about a story that's in the news this morning. Rachel Maddow on MSNBC released a copy of Trump's 2005 tax return. It showed that he paid $38 million in federal taxes on an income of $153 million. He also reported a $105 million write-down in business losses. The return was obtained by investigative journalist David K. Johnston, who happens to be a fairly regular guest on Wisconsin Public Radio. But even David K. Johnston said that he may have the leak of this income tax return might have been the White House itself.
I know.
So what do you as a journalist and a media writer make of this story?
Wow. Where to begin? I mean, I think that in the amount that Trump paid put him in about the 25% bracket, which he should probably, you know, just based on income, be up in the lower 30%. So I can see why the White House would have done that, because the last time there was a leak of a few pages of Trump's tax return, I think, was in October by the New York Times. And at that point, it showed how Trump was paying no taxes. So this leak is to the White House's benefit, because it shows that, A, that he did pay, and, two, that he didn't pay, like, in the 2 or 5% bracket. So I think I actually, David K. Johnston's a friend of mine, and so I think it's smart of him to mention, to bring that up. And also the White House right away tried to get in front of this story by disparaging Rachel Maddow for publishing Trump's tax returns, which, you know, if I had just taken your tax returns and published it, you would be outraged as a private citizen. But he is the president of the United States. He's a public figure, so I don't have a problem with that. And I think that there are many Americans, and the polls will back that up. But can we trust polls? As another story, but who believe that the president of the United States should share his or her tax returns.
Yeah, you can fact check me, but I read a story that said that while Rachel Maddow was leading up to the actual release on air of this 2005 tax return, that the White House released the tax return.
Right, right. So to preempt it, to get out in front of the story, but you know, all that did is make it credible, make what Maddow and Johnston were releasing credible. And as I just said, I think that shows that, you know, in 2005, Donald Trump did pay, you know, in the 25% bracket for pay federal taxes. So they think it makes Donald Trump, if that works to Trump's advantage.
Yeah. What do you make of all the talk of leaks and Donald Trump saying these leaks are, you know, have to stop and this is bad for democracy? But sometimes leaks, I guess, can be helpful to an administration.
You know, I live in Arlington, Virginia, and just last night we were driving by the garage where Deep Throat of Watergate fame met with Bob Woodward to leak information about Richard Nixon. So that, you know, certainly Woodward and Bernstein are not singularly responsible for exposing a corrupt or criminal president, and bringing down the first, you know, Nixon was the first and only president to actually resign. So leaks are very necessary in terms of a democracy and information getting out. They need to be thoroughly checked. They need to be vetted. Why is someone leaking? What's the motivation? Is the information credible? Right now, it seems like leaks are the undoing of the Trump administration. I mean, it is through leaks so far that the National Security Advisor, Mike Flynn, had a very short term in office, and that Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General for the United States, is not going to be involved in anything that the Justice Department does in terms of the Russians hacking into our Internet system. So leaks actually do make a difference, and as long as the news media is responsible and really verifies and vets and checks 5 different ways, and if not more, I think that they're going to be critical to this administration, particularly when they don't seem to be very forthcoming with information. But having said that, let's not pretend that President Obama was a free and open I had a free and open information, I'm sorry, free and open administration. Mm-hmm. Obama is famous for cracking down on the media, going around the media, using social media to communicate in many of the ways that, you know, Donald Trump has also done.
Did the Obama administration exclude media from gaggles and the like?
They didn't, but Fox News was quick to remind viewers and the rest of the world that when President Obama was first elected, there was an attempt by the Obama administration to squeeze out Fox News. And so the rest of the journalists rallied around and said, no, Fox News needs to be part of this. But there was an attempt to freeze out Fox News in the same way that now Trump is singularly focusing on, you know, appearing on Fox News.
Let's go back to the phones. Dan in Franksville is with us. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, I don't want to be negative, but I had lunch with Jim Sensenbrenner over at St. Brulo's Church in Dalston. Had breakfast with Scott Fitzgerald out there in Johnson Creek at a Detman Farm. I've had breakfast and lunch with these people. I'm sitting straight across with them for 10 or 20 minutes, and they engage me. Scott Fitzgerald's a super nice guy, but he falls short when you debate him on the subject that you're talking about. And it says that if you want to be a politician, you have to basically take bribes. And they go, but that would be bribery. That's illegal. I says, not really. If they come to your office and they want things done, you have to take their money. Otherwise, you're not even going to have money to even run or stay in office. So you have to cut deals. That's what they do most today is cut deals and hobnob around people that want favors. But those favors and where they're getting their money from is not from the public. I mean,
I don't mean to interrupt, but how does this relate to our discussion that that we're more politically involved and reading the news a lot more?
Well, you can be more politically involved, but it's not going to help much. I mean, Noam Chomsky put together the book Manufacturing Consent. I mean, if you look that over, that's what I tell young people to do. Look it over and see how the media is basically the worst enemy. I mean, you can't go into Iraq unless the media says that's an okay venture, no matter what the politicians say, because the media will expose that, whether it's real or not. And the media was a full press. Heck, they got rid of Phil Donahue. He had good ratings, and he was one of the few that were saying Iraq's a bad idea. And they pulled him off the network with good ratings. I mean, that tells you about how the book, you know, Manufacturing Consent, works.
Yeah. All right. So a couple of different areas there. The media are lapdogs, maybe, more so than we think, I think is what Dan is trying to say. And
well, I think he's talking about a very specific time, and I actually wrote a report about how the media handled the U.S. Army, U.S. government going into Iraq, and that was right after 9/11. And I think, and this is not an excuse; it's an explanation. And I mean, he's correct on that the media were lapdogs then, and they're, you know, as a country, we were completely shattered emotionally and just. You know, nothing like that had happened in recent history, the 9/11 attacks. And I think that one of the things in my reporting at that time that was fascinating was to see how the Pentagon in particular co-opted journalists, because they brought them into the Pentagon, particularly the bureau chiefs and heads of news organizations, and said, if we go into Iraq, do you want to go with us? And they brought them along. There was training done. And so there just was not very much at all, I would say, critical reporting on whether or not there were weapons of mass destruction. And I think the news media was very intrigued with the idea of embedding and going in with the troops. And I'm sure there'll be people who will disagree with what I'm saying, but that was my perspective.
Yeah. And your perspective now is that it's a lot different than that.
I think that there's a much more of, wow, we were duped, we let ourselves be duped, we didn't do our job well. And, I mean, there's also that same kind of self-reflection going on, Joy, right after the election of not we were duped, but wow, we really missed this. You know, we didn't really understand the level of anger among a lot of the Trump supporters, particularly Democrats who had always voted Democrats, who voted for Donald Trump. And, you know, there's everyone, and it seems including Donald Trump, was surprised that Donald Trump won.
Yeah.
So, and I won't say everyone. There was obviously core people who really did believe that he was going to do it. But after that, I think the media really stepped back and was like, whoa, we need to really be much more skeptical. We need to reach out to far, far wider circles and really try to understand what's happening in America.
Do you have any comment on Dan's I think he was trying to say big money controls politics, and we, you know, the little guy can't really do anything about it.
You know, there's definitely that belief, but I do think that, let's just take these town halls, for example.
Yeah.
And this morning, you know, when I was half asleep, I heard, and I don't even remember what state it was in, but a Republican legislator, congressman, meeting with, I think he said, like 1,500 people came to a town hall, which he had said had never happened before. And so it's very hard to ignore 1,500 people who are coming to talk about the Affordable Health Care Act, and or AKA Obamacare, and the concerns about it. I do really think that, you know, the numbers and people actually, you know, complaining and going to these meetings and not just, and calling and emailing does have an impact. But there's no doubt that if you want to run for re-election, and you've got to do that every 2 years as a congressman, you need money. And so you're going to have to talk, you know, to the devil.
Yeah. Let's go to Christina.
But they should be transparent about it.
Christina in Solon Springs is with us. Hi, Christina.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Well, I was born in Germany in 1948 after the war, and I immigrated to the United States in 1995. I was very active in the, you know, women's liberation and the 68th demonstration in Germany. When I came to the United States, I didn't ever believe that I would be politically active again, but this election really got me going. I have two granddaughters here, and they are now already politically active at 16 and 14.
Wow!
And
great.
Or politically aware, I would say, you know, like this. Mm-hmm. And I joined here after the shock, and then fear coming up, and realization how dangerous it is, especially the people Trump is surrounding himself, like Steve Bannon, and seeing like groups like alt-right doing the Heil Trump greet.
And I'm going to have to jump in. I'm so, so sorry, Christina. She is a member of a group called the Indivisibles, and their members are showing up at the town halls and pressing lawmakers. So she was inspired to do so by the election of Donald Trump. Alicia Shepard, we're out of time. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Alicia Shepard is a media writer, journalist, and former ombudsman for NPR. Her piece, Trump Has Already Made America Great Again, ran last week in USA Today. And we have posted it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.